everyone. Welcome to the Inside the Rope SmackDown summary. It's me, it's Sandra. I'm hosting a show today, and with me, just like yesterday, because we're on our own this week, we're doing our own thing. Kenny's away, David and Sandra will play. I'm here with David J. McCutcheon. Hello. Welcome to the A show, David.
Oh, it's so nice to finally be away from the B show. I'm on the A show with the A plus player herself, Sandra Ruth. Wesselstein Ruth Dick.
That's a new one. I like
that. That is a new one. I like being new on this program, especially because I get to talk about SmackDown for like an actual episode, a full length episode where my opinions are valid and they count for something. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited because I love SmackDown.
SmackDown's a great show. SmackDown was pretty fun this week too, I thought. And it was one of those things where I feel like Raw this week was very good. So again, I feel like it was a great week for Kenny to kind of fuck off with his new best friend, Broken Matt Hardy, and get potentially deleted. Like, I don't so much want him to be deleted. I know you might want him deleted because he's breaking your heart and causing 12 more surgeries. But I don't so much want him to be deleted because, I don't know, I've grown fond of his companionship here on the SmackDown summary. But at the same time,
I know you haven't.
You're in a very vulnerable place.
You bring Robert back. Bring in Robert to replace Kenny. That's what I say.
You know, I do miss Robert. It was his birthday yesterday, and we didn't say happy birthday to him on the Raw Rundown. So happy birthday yesterday, Robert. We miss you.
Robert, if you're listening, I will murder anyone that you want me to in order to get you on a show talking wrestling with me, your best friend. Me and Robert are the real life Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho.
For real best friends. But doesn't that mean you're going to stab each other in the back potentially?
No. We are best friends forever. Okay. We added the extra F to the best friends. We are BFFs. Best friends.
I don't know if you can hold a candle to Sasha and Charlotte and Summer Rae. Summer Rae, the original originator of the BFFs. I don't think that's a word. I just made it up. But whatever. It's okay. We're going with it here in the SmackDown summary.
My best friend always used to say that we were the BBFFs, the best butt-fucking friends. So that could be a thing.
Robert. It could absolutely. This has escalated. I'm enjoying every moment of it.
I'm just saying, Robert, if you're listening, I do have the divorce papers handy. If you want to elope, go off gallivanting the same way. I don't know if it's actually the same way that Kenny and Matt Hardy are currently doing over in the UK right now.
I've heard there's a good bit of gallivanting going on, but we're still here in America, and we're going to talk about SmackDown Live. And to open the show tonight, we had Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss contract signing, which I thoroughly enjoyed personally. Alexa Bliss came out first, Becky Lynch came out second. Renee Young actually welcomed us to the show and brought them both out and everything. Alexa Bliss immediately being mean girl that she is, because she's just such a horrible, horrible person, right? Sent Renee off and criticized her fashion sense.
I love Alexa Bliss. This is what I wanted to do on this show, was to talk about all the people that I love that I never get to talk about.
She's a delight, isn't she?
Alexa Bliss is the most underrated female performer. I was so happy that they ended up going with her. I think that she is the most seasoned out of everybody who got called up to SmackDown. I think that she will be the first breakout women star from the SmackDown show. I'm happy that they decided to give her the first run at the title out of all of the quote-unquote new stars that they brought up from NXT. Very deserving. I love Alexa. She's very fun. She's quick-witted. She's phenomenal. I love Alexa Bliss.
One of the things I love about her so much is that Alexa Bliss, when she started in NXT, right? And I'm sorry that I'm going to always kind of go back to NXT, but it is my first love. It's what brought me to the game.
That is your roots.
It is my roots. Yellow ropes forever. It's not just a hashtag. It's in my heart. And when Alexa Bliss came into NXT, she was glitter. She was sparkles. She had fairy dust that she sneezed all over everyone. And it was delightful, right? Because in real life, she loves Disney, and she loves sparkly things, and she loves glitter. And you know what Alexa Bliss has managed to do in this ever-evolving mean girl kind of persona? she's managed to take Disney princess references and, like, glitter and whatnot and make it so, like, so evil. She's such an evil fairy now. She's actually sort of managed to get back to her original character in a way and make herself feel even more fully formed because, you know, she says, I'm coming for you and your women's title too and that kind of thing. And Becky Lynch calls her out on it. I like that Becky Lynch is also very quick. I thought both of them were excellent on the mic here when Alexa tells Renee to basically fuck off and, you know, you and your fashion sense are terrible. And Becky Lynch goes, oh, coming from little Miss Harley Quinn over there. Which, you know, to me would not be insult. If you want to look like Harley Quinn, I think that's amazing. And I absolutely love Alexa Bliss looking like Harley Quinn. I think it's fantastic and it absolutely works for me. But I appreciate that Becky Lynch called her out on it. And it seemed, they both seemed very natural, I guess, here. Like they actually had an issue with each other and they weren't just reading words off of a piece of paper.
I completely agree. This is actually something to where they're taking something that is written down for them, but it feels natural. It doesn't feel scripted. It feels like it's coming from two performers. And of course, at the end of this, they had to rip the black dressing off of that table and use it. Because, Sandra, what type of match are they having?
They're going to be having a tables match, as we find out in a segment later on. We can just talk about that now. Becky Lynch, later on in the show, talks to Renee Young as she's icing her back after Alexa Bliss puts her through a table, after Alexa Bliss also thumbs her in the eye, right? Because she's so super mean. And I really liked the way that this all played out, because, again, it felt very natural with Becky Lynch having called Alexa Lexi earlier in the promo, and then Alexa says, oh, and by the way, I don't know if they taught you how to speak or something on that potato farm you come from, but don't call me Lexi. It's Alexa. Say it with me. Alexa. And Becky's like, you know, just hold off right there and just answer me this. And then forearms her to death, right? Over the table. And that's where they take the dressing off the table and they get up on the top turnbuckle and Alexa ends up throwing Becky through the table and it looks super sore and super awesome. And I don't know. For some reason, there are some contract signing brawls that work for me, and there are some contract signing brawls that don't work for me. And I can't always put my finger on what it is that works or doesn't work, but this one totally worked for me. So then when we find out later on in the show, when Becky Lynch is icing her back and saying that she has, you know, a, what did she say, like a bruised spine or spine bruise or something, but she's going to be ready for Sunday, and Alexa is challenging Becky to a tables match because of the events earlier on in the evening, and Becky basically says, no, I'm ready for that. I'm absolutely ready for that, and I'm going to fight. This story between Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss is incredibly simple, right? Like, in terms of pro wrestling storytelling, it's absolutely, there is a mean girl, and there is also a woman who has worked very hard. And we saw Becky Lynch work really hard to get to the title scene on Raw before the brand split. So she doesn't really give off vibes to me the way that Finn Balor or Shinsuke Nakamura kind of tend to in NXT right now. It's something I complain about a little bit, is like just the babyface champion without that much story or without having faced obstacles. Becky Lynch doesn't feel like one of those to me. I think because not only have I seen her journey in NXT, but we also were familiar with her on the main roster, and she did face adversity before getting the title. So I really like that, and I like Alexa wanting to prove herself, because she says that she's the deserving champion because her foot was on the rope. Doesn't necessarily mean she would have won the title, but in her mind it does, because she's super entitled, and she's super confident in herself, and she's also just really, really mean. So it's a really simple story.
It's an excellent way to parlay that into a longer feud.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, technically she did have her foot on the rope. So here's the thing. My favorite kind of heels are the heels who have something to brag about, something to hang themselves up on. That's excellent to me. Whenever a heel can tell the truth, and this is something, whenever she goes, hey, I was robbed, my foot was on the rope, she's telling the truth.
She's not absolutely like telling the truth.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like she's just lying about it. She has a legitimate gripe.
She does, and it's how she responds to that legitimate gripe that makes her such a great heel. Because she has a legitimate gripe that she deserves another match because her foot was on the rope and the ref didn't see it. And I like also just the detail of Becky wasn't taking advantage of the situation. She would have won fair and square if they'd been in the middle, so it wasn't Becky acting like a dick right? Like the way so many baby faces do. I think that's one of the things I like about Becky in this situation too, is she does still come off as a good guy with a lot of, you know, straight fire within her. She says that an awful lot. And now she's comparing herself to a honey badger, which is kind of weird, but I still love her. But I feel like their roles are so defined and they feel very fully formed to me. And the story feels like it has a progression. And I really, really love it. It's so simple, but I think it's great. And then after we had the contract signing, we had Kalisto and Dolph Ziggler versus Baron Corbin and The Miz, kind of mixing up the feuds a little bit again. And something that occurred to me during this match, when Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin were across each other in the ring, I was like, wow, for a while, Dolph Ziggler versus Baron Corbin was the feud that wouldn't end. And I said, I never wanted to see them across the ring from each other ever again in my entire life. But a compliment that I'll give to SmackDown is that they've been kept apart long enough and the stories have progressed enough that I forgot about it at first. And it didn't occur to me right away where I was like, oh my gosh, I never wanted to see this again and this is happening again and this is so old hat, right? Like, it felt like the mixing of two completely separate stories and that Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin being across from each other didn't bother me. And that's, in a roundabout strange way, kind of a compliment to SmackDown.
Right, right. And no, I actually felt the same way. Baron Corbin has made a few leaps and bounds as of late. Somebody asked me on Twitter, and I hate this question. I honestly do, because I don't want to see anybody fired, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not the type of person that I am beyond wrestling. That someone said, you have to fire 5 performers in all of WWE. Who are they? And Baron Corbin was number 5 on my list, just barely not making the cut. If I were to answer that question today, he definitely would make the cut because he absolutely deserves his spot. He's really turned it around since SmackDown began, I think.
I think he has too. And Baron Corbin is someone that it took a while for me to get invested in. And again, he's a performer that I've been watching for ages and ages and ages because NXT, of course. And for a long time, I just thought, he doesn't have anything, right? Like, I'm so uninterested in this guy. And I still don't know that I see super charisma from him all the time, but he's getting there. And I think what helps with Baron Corbin is just his authenticity that he gives out, that he's such a dick and he doesn't care about anyone, which manifested itself in this match, which I thought was a pretty fun match, all things told. I think everyone kind of played their part really well. And then, you know, you had Maryse on the outside trying to help out The Miz. I'm not super sure why Miz would get a ladder out and then try to run Dolph Ziggler into it and how that wouldn't be a disqualification also. But that's a little bit of a nitpick. Dolph Ziggler didn't actually run into the ladder, so whatever, it is what it is. Wrestling. So
something that my wife always goes on about, and I absolutely see her gripe with it, is she goes, you can never hit anybody with a steel chair because you'll get disqualified, but you can sure as fuck run them into the steel ring steps just fine, and no one bats an eye. And
I'm
that's the absolute truth.
Yeah, like, I'm wondering if, and this is something that I was actually thinking way too hard about today as I rewatched this match. I was like, does it matter if you run the person into the weapon, then it's okay, but if you run the weapon into the person, then it's not?
That's a very good, but here's the thing, though, is it's illegal to untie the ring post, turnbuckle pads, mm-hmm. and then hit your opponent in the head on the exposed ring post, right?
Technically, but how often do people actually get disqualified for that?
Back in the day, all the time.
Yeah, but that's back in the day. Back in the day in WCW, you'd get disqualified for throwing someone over the top rope.
Well, that wasn't even real because WCW was, as I iterated on last week's Raw Rundown, for weeping cowardly wussies. Yes,
I do know your feelings on this, but at the end of the match, Baron Corbin shows that he absolutely gives zero fucks about this, and he just wants to get his hands on Kalisto, right? And I think because Baron Corbin wants to feel big and dominant and has always felt that these little indie darlings or these little pests, as he calls them, these little people who are getting in his way, who he just can't be bothered by, right? Kalisto got one up on Baron Corbin once, and that bothers the shit out of Baron Corbin because Kalisto injured his knee. And Kalisto's not supposed to be able to get one up on Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin is awesome. Baron Corbin's the guy who got here with a phone call that WWE made to him, by the way, because he's that great and he's that awesome. And everybody should want Baron Corbin in Baron Corbin's mind. And so for Kalisto to get into his head is just bothering him like crazy. So what does he do? They almost have the match won, right? Miz and Baron Corbin do, especially because Maryse on the outside being awesome takes the ladder and effectively gets rid of Dolph Ziggler. Miz is about to beat Kalisto. Everything's about to be grand. Baron Corbin hits Kalisto with a chair and causes a disqualification.
Just like that.
Just like that. So Dolph Ziggler and Kalisto are the winners. Dolph Ziggler looks pretty pissed about the way they won because he's pissed at Maryse for hitting him with a ladder. And, you know, they didn't win in the way they would like to win. But Baron Corbin has proven, no, he doesn't belong on a team. He doesn't belong working with someone, even someone as dastardly as The Miz, who didn't do anything to Baron Corbin. I just really, really liked what he did here. And it's totally working for me now. And I'm glad, because one of my things in wrestling is I really like when performers are terrible and I don't like them and I don't care about them. And then I become more, I don't know, intrigued by them, or they show
invested.
Me something, because then I like them and I would rather like everything, because that's why I watch wrestling, is to like stuff, you know?
My only issue is Daniel Bryan needs to step in and actually give a real punishment to Baron Corbin for the way that he's been acting, the way that he cost SmackDown the Cruiserweight division, the way that he was placed in a tag team match and deliberately sabotaged it. I need to see some kind of reaction from the general manager on this.
That's a fair point. I think, well, I mean, it was interesting on this episode, especially because Daniel Bryan wasn't even here tonight. Daniel
right.
Bryan was nowhere to be found, which
exactly
in a way is kind of refreshing after a Raw with Mick Foley all over it.
Daniel Bryan is much better in the general manager job than Mick Foley.
Oh, he's absolutely much better in the general manager job, and especially because he doesn't stick his nose into everything. We could use Daniel Bryan and or Shane McMahon, but mostly Daniel Bryan, because Shane leaves day-to-day stuff up to Daniel Bryan. I feel like the roles on SmackDown are a little more defined than on Raw as well, which is something
right.
I like. But I would like to see Daniel Bryan get some law and order, and I think maybe that'll come after TLC. I mean, TLC is a pay-per-view that kind of needs some chaos going into it, because so many of the matches are no disqualification or anything goes or whatever, right? I mean,
right.
Let's be honest, a chairs match is the same as a no disqualification match. If you look at the rules themselves, it's just you are encouraged to use chairs. So, I mean, there are a lot of storytelling things that can happen in these sort of chaotic matches and whatnot. And I would like to see some sort of consequence come out of it if shenanigans continue to ensue. I am actually really looking forward to Baron Corbin versus Kalisto in a chairs match, which is weird because I hate chairs matches. But I think something about the size difference between Kalisto and Baron Corbin works for me. And I'm probably the one here at Inside the Ropes that still likes Kalisto the most. I don't know. But
I'm perfectly fine with Kalisto.
I mean, I like him in ring. I really do. I think Kenny's right about his promo skills.
In ring, he is phenomenal. And in all honesty, that's all I truly need from a performer to like them. Like, not love them, but in order to like them, that's all I really need is for them to be decent in the ring.
And I think he tells stories in the ring with his good performances, too. He's also, he's always wrestled bigger than he is, I guess. That's why I like the Salida del Sol as a finisher and whatnot, because it's something that requires him to kind of use his size to his advantage on bigger opponents. And I don't know, there's just something that's always worked for me about it. And I think giving him a little bit more TV time lately and letting him shine in the ring has, I don't know, it's been working for me. And I kind of really want to see him shine a little bit more. But after that, we got a 205 Live promo from the announcers, and it was kind of, you know, 205 Live is happening. Honestly, I haven't watched it, but
It's very good. That's all I'll say to avoid spoilers.
Yeah, I do plan to watch it. I do. I haven't really gotten the chance today. But after that, Dasha Fuentes was backstage with American Alpha, and they cut a pretty decent promo, I thought. They
I love this promo!
Yeah, it was good!
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah, and The thing about it is these guys, they appear very comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
On live TV. And that is so hard. That's the hardest thing to teach, right? Like, Kalisto was tripping over his words and everything whenever he did that promo, the infamous promo.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. These guys look comfortable. They're ready. And that you can't teach being comfortable in front of a live microphone.
No,
right?
That absolutely just comes with practice. And I feel like it also shows their comfort with one another, which was one of the stories going into the main event, right? Is Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt are a family now. And American Alpha are like, no, we're brothers. And we've been together for a long time. And it's kind of funny when you consider that they got together originally because Chad Gable was stalking Jason Jordan with a towel with his name on it. And like, Jason Jordan didn't want Chad Gable as his partner for some inexplicable reason. I'm glad that Jason Jordan relented, accepted Chad Gable as a partner and as a brother, and that they're together now, because it's absolutely working. And I don't know, just something about their, I don't know, their repertoire or whatever, like their, not repertoire, that's the wrong word, rapport? Rapport is what I was going for there.
Yes,
their rapport.
Absolutely.
It works, because Chad Gable says something about, you know, I wonder if though the Wyatts can levitate, because, you know, Jason's going to suplex them and they'll go up and up and up and never come down. And then Jason Jordan's like, well, I mean, eventually they'll have to come down. And Chad's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess they will. That's true. And
they,
I don't know.
They are just
stuff.
So good. And the fact of the matter is, out of everybody on SmackDown, SmackDown has done wonders for a lot of performers. What SmackDown has not done very well up to this point is book American Alpha to look strong and put them in roles that they honestly deserve. Roles that fit them. I feel that American Alpha, out of everybody on SmackDown, has been treated the most harshly in terms of creative. I'm hoping this is the turning point, because after this promo, I want to see American Alpha every week, not only just wrestling, in a backstage vignette, cutting a promo, doing something to maximize that allows them to maximize their minutes, because I need more of American Alpha and I need them featured predominantly.
And I'm really glad that you feel that way. I feel that way also. And I have, you know, a very strong attachment to American Alpha. I love American Alpha. I have for a long time. And I think that they've cooled off a lot on the main roster so far. But
this
show does feel like a turning point to me. Like,
it does.
I feel like they're building them finally to make us want more American Alpha, just like what you're saying. I think your response to American Alpha on this episode is exactly what they're going for. And I'm hoping it's what they're going for, because that's going to make us want American Alpha to win the titles that much more when it finally happens. And I think if we can continue building them and getting a little bit more heat behind them and everything, then that will make the eventual title win and reign even better for me anyway.
Absolutely.
But after that, the Wyatts respond to American Alpha, right? Like, Bray says something, and he's very mumbly about it. And I love Bray Wyatt so much right now. But then Randy Orton starts talking, and he says something that was really interesting with Luke Harper standing right there, because he said, you know, Bray, I used to be just like American Alpha. I used to be naive. But now you and I are the only two that matter. And I was like, excuse me, Luke Harper is standing right there. And Luke Harper didn't really respond. If you look at him, his eyes kind of are like, right, Randy, seriously, I'm standing right here. Right here I am, Luke Harper, original member of the Wyatt family. Were you an original member of the Wyatt family? No, you were not, sir. But Luke Harper is a very calm and controlled individual, so he doesn't really respond to this. And then Orton turns to Harper also and says, you know, and are you going to do what needs to be done against Kane tonight? Because, you know, he's Randy Orton talking about him and Bray Wyatt and saying they're the only two that matter and that no one can break their bond. I'd be pissed if I were Luke Harper personally. But
then Randy Orton just starts giving orders to Luke Harper.
Exactly.
Like, what the fuck?
Right?
What the fuck?
I'd be so pissed. So, you know what this is doing, David? This is building a story within a story. Because we have the story of the Wyatt family going for the tag titles, which, you know, spoiler, we'll find out later in the show, they're going for the tag titles, right? But we also have this tension between Randy Orton and Luke Harper that's built throughout the show. And I'm so into all of it, like so 100%.
Yeah.
because there are so many options coming out of this. And I like the tension between them. I like everything that's coming out of it. The whole vibe of it is just really intriguing. And again, it's not difficult storytelling. It's an interloper coming into a team, an established team, an established family, right? And it's an interloper coming in thinking that he rules the roost because, you know, I mean, to be fair, he's Randy Orton. He's been around a long time and he's a big star. But I think that could cause some tension and I think it could be really interesting. And so
I'm interested actually to see if Randy Orton is going for the hierarchy of the Wyatt family. If he is infiltrating with his mind games and everything else, if he is infiltrating the Wyatt family to take it away from Bray.
Well, I feel like it could happen. Like, it could be what he's going for, right?
I think that may be the end game here. And I am absolutely intrigued. Sandra, do you think this is the most interesting that Randy Orton has been in years?
Yes. 100% yes. I absolutely do.
Yeah, like, I think this is the most interesting that Randy Orton has been in, God, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years? Like, for real.
A really long time.
Yeah. This is good stuff for him, and I'm happy that he's playing along with it. It's good stuff for Bray Wyatt. It's good stuff for the Wyatt family. It feels like the Wyatts have a purpose now.
They do, and they were purposeless for so long, right? And it's interesting about Randy Orton because I've always liked comeback Randy Orton because it seems like when he comes back from something, whether he's injured or on vacation or has gone away for whatever, right?
Drugs.
Sure. Yeah, drugs. It seems like when he comes back, a lot of times he has a little bit of a fire in him because he's like, hey, I'm back. I'm interested again because I've been away. And then he loses interest really quickly, and there's not a maintenance to his being interested and interesting as a result. And right. He seems both interested, and it makes him more interesting to me. And this seems like more of an actual story than anything we've seen with Randy Orton, which I think is why he's the most interesting, right? And he also seems to be having fun with it. And you can kind of tell. I feel like Randy Orton's one of those guys you can kind of tell. Whether he's having fun with it or not.
Oh, easily, because he phones it in otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. And he's, I don't know, he's killing it for me. And the tension between, I really, really, down the line, not next week, down the line, as this progresses, I really want to see Randy Orton versus Luke Harper. Like, really bad.
More than anything, I can't wait to see Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt. And I'm hoping that it is a babyface Bray Wyatt against a heel Randy Orton.
That would be amazing. Think about the words that you just said just there. You can't wait to see Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt. That's something we just saw. But the story is so good right now that you but can't wait so to good. See it again.
And see, that is the huge difference between wasted motion and everything being fluid and having meaning. And that's the most beautiful thing that a wrestling angle can have is meaning.
I love you, SmackDown Live. I love you so much. I'm so excited about so many things right now. But after that promo, we got Carmella, and she was supposed to face somebody, theoretically. Not super sure who she was supposed to face here. Now, David, I know your feelings on Carmella and Nikki Bella, so just let me be excited first, okay?
In fact, I will abstain from talking about this segment.
Okay. That's fine. I mean, like, I would let you talk about it, but I just really want a chance to be happy first.
That's fine.
Thank you. So Carmella comes out, and she gets on the microphone, and I think she does fairly well here. I don't think she sounds quite as natural as Alexa Bliss or Becky Lynch did, but she says that she has a message for, you know, Nikki Bella's boyfriend. She has a message for Mr. Hustle, Loyalty, Respect, and she basically says she's going to rough Nikki up real bad in their no DQ match. She says something about how, you know, Nikki's Bella twins are going to pop out her back, and she's going to arrange Nikki's face so badly that the last thing on her mind will be marriage. So she's doing John Cena a favor. Stuff like that is what Carmella is saying. And she says, you know, she has no idea what the E! Network is going to do when they have to cancel season 2 of Total Bellas, which brings on Nikki Bella's music, which brings out Nikki Bella running to the ring to attack Carmella because Carmella is just being an absolute dick to her. And Nikki Bella is not going to abide it anymore. Something I really like about this, not a babyface attacking for no reason, a babyface attacking for a reason. Nikki Bella has every reason to be upset with Carmella, because not only is Carmella talking trash about Nikki, she's talking trash about Nikki's man as well. And again, it's really simple. It's kind of the old jealousy storyline that I really, really hate in terms of divas booking. But for some reason, I think this kind of storyline works a lot better for me when it's in the context of a division with other stories also going on, and when the story of every single woman isn't, I am jealous and I hate you. And also, I still really, really like Nikki Bella as a babyface here. The whole thing is totally working for me. I can't wait to see them kick the shit out of each other. I'm really excited to see what Nikki Bella and Carmella can do. I don't think that they're as seasoned, like, well, I mean, Nikki Bella's been doing this a lot longer, but I don't think they're as good in ring as Sasha and Charlotte. They're not. But I think that they could do something really good. I'm super into the story, so I can't wait to see what they do on Sunday. And even though they've been attacking each other week in, week out, this one didn't really progress a whole lot, necessarily, but I still just really enjoyed it because I'm super into their feud and I'm super into Carmella as just a complete dickhead and Nikki Bella as, you know, not a saint. She said last week she's not Mother Teresa, but I think she's still a good babyface and she's totally working for me as a babyface, and I kind of want to see Carmella get her head kicked in. So it's working for me. You said you didn't have anything to say about this?
I think it reminds me of the Divas division, and I would prefer to leave that in the past. Also, Nikki Bella can't be Mother Teresa anyway, because Mother Teresa never had breast implants. That's my thoughts.
Okay, that is totally fair. I know you don't like either of them, so we can just move on.
I do not.
And that is totally fine, totally your prerogative. It's the blight on SmackDown for you, and I understand
it. It is. Every good show needs a piss break. This is my piss break, just as the Golden Truth would be my piss break on Raw.
And you know what? Valid. I'm really into it. And I was into the Golden Truth epic love story, so I don't know what that says about me. But, you know, after that, we got a little bit look back at last week with the James Ellsworth, AJ Styles ladder match and everything with Dean Ambrose walking backstage. We're going to have an Ambrose Asylum, and we get an Ambrose Asylum after that. Ambrose has, you know, of course, TLC is coming up, so we have to have tables, ladders, and chairs in the ring because props and pay-per-view happening. I kind of actually like Dean Ambrose here a little bit for some reason. Like, maybe just when he doesn't wrestle and throw terrible punches, and when he's not super wacky, he works a lot better for me. I think he's been reining in his character a little bit more. I still have reservations about Dean Ambrose as a character, so I'm not willing to be like, oh, I'm a super Dean Ambrose fan right now. But again, as I like to say, I'm always willing to give people a chance to get better and to improve and to show me what they can do. And I thought this worked for me. Dean Ambrose had kind of an intensity to him. But he brings out James Ellsworth, of course, and, you know, basically talks to him and said, did you ever think you'd be on SmackDown? And James, of course, is like, I didn't even think I would ever be on SmackDown, and now I'm a WWE superstar, and he's super emotional about it, of course, because he's James Ellsworth. Dean Ambrose makes fun of his boots at one point. I don't know why, like, maybe just to point out, like, no, you seriously don't belong here. I feel a little bad for James.
Yeah. I was going to say, they kind of shit on James a bit here. They called him a mutant later on in the thing. I kind of feel bad for James Ellsworth as a person, because Vince McMahon's sense of humor is so cruel.
It really is. And I mean, I've heard James Ellsworth talk on interviews, like, not in the past month or so when a lot of the James Ellsworth story stuff has been happening, but before, like when he was a jobber against Braun Strowman and when he first started appearing on SmackDown, he, like, as a person was like, no, I'm super glad I look weird because otherwise I wouldn't be able to do this. And this is awesome. And this is my dream. And so I feel like he's probably fine with it, but it does come off as very cruel.
Yeah. It's the type of thing that once you get to a certain point of it, it's like, all right, we get it. You think he's funny looking, that's fine. And hey, he is funny looking, but he's not like a hideous, horrible monster man. It's not like we're staring at the Elephant Man week in and week out.
Yeah, Exactly. And I mean, making fun of his wrestling boots actually made me feel worse than making fun of his face for some reason. Just because I was like, well, I mean, he's been wrestling on the indies. He can't have a lot of money from that. Like, a lot of guys can't afford a lot of boots. Like, I don't know, lay off a little bit. I just felt bad for him.
Maybe this is all leading up to him getting brand new wrestling boots.
And you know what? I'm sure that he will get brand new wrestling boots. And I think that will be a glorious thing. It's just like Dean Ambrose is supposed to be his friend, right? And Dean Ambrose has shown that he does care about him.
That's my thing. Right.
But it seems like I wish I had it in front of me so I could credit the person who actually said this. But someone put on Twitter, oh, I get it. James Ellsworth is just Mitch in human form. Like Mitch the Plant. And it's kind of true.
Yes.
Right?
No, like, no.
James Ellsworth is Dean Ambrose's new little, like, inanimate object buddy, except for he's not an inanimate object. He is a human.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of like Dean Ambrose found a shooting star. And wished upon it for a real life Mitch.
He wanted a real boy.
Yes, exactly. Pinocchio came to life.
And it was James Ellsworth. I mean, trotting James Ellsworth out in that way too big for him shirt did not do James Ellsworth any favors.
I actually do love the way too big for him shirt on James Ellsworth, though. It is kind of funny.
It's the most James Ellsworth thing ever.
Yes, it is.
It's real. Like, the thing is, when you wear an oversized shirt and you're not wearing pants, right? It just looks like you forgot to put pants on. Because when wrestlers come out and they're in their trunks and they have a shirt that fits them, that's, you know, tighter and whatnot, that doesn't look so bad. That doesn't necessarily look like, no, I just seriously forgot to put on pants this morning. But James Ellsworth looks like he just rolled out of bed and doesn't wear pants or something.
Yes, and we all do not want to see his dong. So we are hoping that James Ellsworth did remember to put on pants this morning.
Let us pray.
A lot of people always ask me, because I am the James Ellsworth guy. Sandra, I don't know if you listen to the Raw Rundown.
I do. Of course I do.
But on a weekly basis, I was praying and hoping for James Ellsworth to get a spot in the WWE. I'm so happy that he actually managed to land a spot on SmackDown. A lot of people have been wondering, though, how I feel about him beating AJ Styles. I will say that it's a little grating at this point. I don't think that the money is where... I don't think there's money with James Ellsworth defeating the world champion on a weekly basis. I think that James Ellsworth should be the... Barry Horowitz of his generation.
Yes.
The guy who has a match every week and loses every week. But damn it, you love watching him.
Absolutely. And I agree with that. I feel like, and Kenny and I had this discussion fairly long form last week, so I won't repeat everything I said. But
of course,
one of the things that I said when we were having the James Ellsworth discussion is, I agree, three times beating AJ Styles might be a little much. But to me, I think a lot of the complaint about it is that people feel that AJ Styles has been devalued, right?
Yes.
And that AJ Styles looks like a chump of a champ. And that AJ Styles looks weak as a champion because he's been beaten by James Ellsworth. And I know Kenny said that he felt this was one of the worst decisions WWE could make. I feel like I'm willing to let it play out still. And the thing is, what I said last week was, I really want AJ Styles to react to this. And I think that it would have been better if it were twice instead of three times. I'll agree with that. Like, I think three times is a lot, but it doesn't necessarily devalue AJ necessarily, because I just said necessarily a whole lot. I apologize. I'm getting on a roll. But it doesn't devalue AJ Styles so much to me because of Dean Ambrose's interference and because of Dean Ambrose's part in the whole situation, and because Dean Ambrose has really been the feud all along. It's not like James Ellsworth has actually beaten AJ Styles in a legitimate way on his own multiple times. I mean, one of the losses, one of the three, is just AJ Styles beating the shit out of James Ellsworth to the point of disqualification, right? So it's not like James Ellsworth did anything to AJ Styles in that instance to beat him.
And one of the others was a ladder match. I tend to be a little more lenient, I guess, with ladder matches.
Yeah, especially when it was basically 2-on-1 at that point. Because Dean Ambrose got involved, and then AJ Styles got caught up in the ropes. I agree that you know, the ladder match did make James Ellsworth look like maybe he could have pulled it off on his own against AJ Styles, but it didn't really, right? Like, AJ Styles had James Ellsworth beat until Dean Ambrose came out. And I still kind of go by the, I don't know, like, I still think AJ Styles didn't take this as seriously as he would, say, a WWE World Heavyweight Championship match, because it's just a contract from some twerp that he's going to beat anyway, right? So he was like, okay, yeah, I'm about to reach up and grab this contract, but Dean Ambrose is out here, and I'm super annoyed by Dean Ambrose.
What's so great about it, though, is that AJ actually did react this week.
That's what I was going to say, is what I wanted so badly was for AJ to react to that loss and then to say, no, I'm really pissed off about this. I don't like that this happened again. I'm going to kick your face in. No more you. No more Dean Ambrose. No more James Ellsworth. No more anyone. I'm the champ who runs the camp. I'm the face who runs the place, and I am going to kill you all. Right? What did AJ Styles do here when he came out? He said he was pissed off and he was absolutely going to, like, basically take out Dean Ambrose, take out James Ellsworth. He beat James Ellsworth senseless this week on SmackDown Live.
It was not even a contest.
It was not a contest at all. He did exactly what I wanted him to do. And for me, James Ellsworth beating AJ Styles, I know this has been kind of a long roundabout way of getting here, but for me, James Ellsworth beating AJ Styles can feed into the story of AJ Styles looking even more dominant and even more like a champion if AJ Styles reacts exactly as he did this week, because he annihilated James Ellsworth this week. That Styles clash off the stairs, I was legitimately afraid for James Ellsworth, especially considering how James Ellsworth took the Styles clash before.
Yeah, I actually, whenever I saw this spot, I went, oh God, no.
I know.
Because I was so afraid of his face, like, careening off of the steel steps.
I was worried he was going to, like, hit his face on the steps and snap his neck into a zillion pieces and that everything was going to be really, really tragic. And, like, I don't know if the risk of that spot was worth it, but it worked out fine, so it was okay.
It did. It did. In the end, everybody was all right.
Everybody was all right, so everything was okay, and I was just really, really nervous about it, which maybe that's probably the point, right? Was to get people like me really, really nervous about it and to make it look really, really brutal, because it looked really brutal.
And also, it facilitated this feud. It lit a fuel. I guess we can go ahead and bring up the consequences that happened later in the show for this.
Oh, absolutely.
With Dean Ambrose just absolutely becoming incensed with the idea of fighting AJ Styles. He didn't want a match. He wanted to fight him for hurting his good friend. Because AJ Styles definitely hurted James Ellsworth. This was absolutely brutal looking. I loved every second of it. And it gave Dean Ambrose a purpose, too, to this feud.
This was the perfect use of James Ellsworth as exactly what we want him to be. The guy who gets beat up.
Yes, this was
a
step in
the
right direction.
Yes.
Yes.
And this is exactly what I wanted from this, mostly because it's exactly what I said I wanted from this last week, and then it actually happened. And so this is where I will defend the James Ellsworth story, even if I understand the criticisms of it. But I think what James Ellsworth as a storytelling tool here, like...
Device.
I didn't want to call him a tool because he doesn't seem like a tool. He seems like a lovely person, frankly. But I couldn't think of another word at the moment. But as a storytelling device, what James Ellsworth has done here is lit a fire under AJ Styles, who was maybe getting a little complacent, right? But losing to James Ellsworth three times has clearly lit a fire under AJ Styles, who really super wants to get his hands on Dean Ambrose now. He actually said the words, "You will give me respect. I want you to stop treating me like a joke," because that's what everybody thinks of him. And again, one of the things I always talk about, authenticity and, you know, the story actually lining up with what people are seeing on the TV. You know, don't treat your audience like they're stupid. They're not treating their audience like we're stupid here. They're saying, y'all might think AJ Styles is a joke here, because he's lost to James Ellsworth three times. AJ Styles is calling that out and saying, no, I don't want to be treated like a joke. I want respect. And this is what I'm going to do to earn it. And I'm going to murder, death, kill James Ellsworth here. And Dean Ambrose responds to that by saying, you murder, death, killed my friend. Now I want to murder, death, kill you. I'm so in. I'm so in for the main event of TLC now.
Me too. This was the perfect segment that they needed to hype up that main event.
Yeah. And I'm super stoked about it. After that, something I'm a little less stoked about, but it is what it is, I guess. Kane versus Luke Harper happens. Again, it happens.
Again, yeah.
And again, yeah. Kane wins with a choke slam.
Again.
Again. The match isn't...
Kane is such a shitty, useless character. Why is he... He's so undefined. He needs to go away for a little bit and come back and then be the Demon Kane. I don't believe in him as a character because just months ago he was trotting out in a fucking suit and now he has that stupid fucking fruit roll up on his face. Get rid of Kane for a little bit, please. I like Kane. I honestly do. But he needs to fucking go away and stop beating legitimate talents right now.
See, I think for me, I have a huge soft spot in my heart for Kane, and I really love Kane.
I like Kane, but he needs to be reinvented or reinvigorated somehow. Do something similar to, hey, why doesn't he come back as a member of the fucking Wyatts?
See, I feel like Kane versus the Wyatts is one of those stories that's always going to be there. And that they might still be trying to fuel a little bit. This still feels fairly interconnected because we're still getting Kane versus the Wyatts in some form because we got Kane beating Luke Harper again. And I feel like I should absolutely be raging about Luke Harper losing to Kane again. And I kind of am in the sense that Luke Harper is so good, right? Like he's really
the most underrated really man on either roster.
He's so good at everything involving wrestling. He can talk, he can wrestle, he can be a character, he can do it all.
He has the facial expressions, he reacts well.
Yes, 100%.
He is a complete package of a professional wrestler, the most overlooked person on either roster, hands down, in my opinion.
I definitely won't say you're wrong. I could probably come up with other people, but right now, in this discussion, I absolutely agree with you because I love Luke Harper. Some of this is going to depend on where it goes for me, because
see, we've been saying that for a long time with Kane and the Wyatts.
We
and
have,
it never goes any.
But my thing is with this newfound situation with Randy Orton and Luke Harper, I feel like there could be a purpose to this. And I kind of also, for some reason, and this makes no sense, I kind of understand wanting to keep Kane as a character and a monster. And I don't know why that is. And everything in my brain just tells me, no, you should just want him to go away. And I just still kind of love him, even though I shouldn't, but I just kind of do. And I don't really know why. But there's just something about him that I understand that they can use him as a storytelling device later on if he looks stronger and if he doesn't just lose to everybody. That said, I'm not super thrilled about Luke Harper losing to Kane multiple times. What happens in the main event kind of does a little bit to not make me so sour on this because I feel like it could be more of a story than just Luke Harper losing to Kane. I feel like there could be something more down the road that they're building to. And if this were a year ago and we were talking about a story on Raw/SmackDown, I would have absolutely no faith in this. But because we're talking about now, and because we're talking about SmackDown Live now, and because I'm so re-intrigued by what the Wyatts are doing, I kind of want to see where it goes, because maybe Luke Harper in a losing angle, and maybe he'll have to prove himself to the Wyatts, and maybe this will be Randy Orton's cause to be like, no, we should kick Luke Harper out of the Wyatts, but like, he's an original Wyatt family member, so Bray Wyatt's not going to like that at all, is he? Because Bray Wyatt still feels a brotherhood with Luke Harper. I mean, Bray Wyatt was shit until Luke Harper came back. Luke Harper was the one to reinvigorate Bray Wyatt, not Randy Orton. Luke Harper was the one to really reinvigorate Bray Wyatt on this run here. So there's a lot going on in my mind, and a lot of this has to do with the fact that I am just super way too invested in the Wyatt family, and I just really want something good to happen, and I don't want Luke Harper to be screwed in all of it.
That's the hope.
And so I kind of trust them to tell a story. But yeah, I'm not super fond of these Kane versus Luke Harper matches, especially because the matches aren't great in themselves. And
nope.
I really hope that Luke Harper comes out of this with something more. I trust that he could, because I think Luke Harper and Randy Orton eventually down the road, I don't want this to happen next week. I don't want Randy Orton to turn on the Wyatts next week, because I feel like there's so much more time left in this. Down the road, I think Randy Orton versus Luke Harper could be really, really cool. And I hope that that's the story that they're leading to.
That's where I'm hoping. I just hope it has some kind of purpose.
Yeah, me too. And so, I don't know. We'll see where that goes. I'm very hesitant about feeling not so angry about this, I guess. But I think now was when we saw Becky with Renee outside the trainer's room. She calls Alexa a little bitch. She has a lot of fire to her. And she, you know, she says if she wants to retain her championship, she's absolutely going to have it. And she's like, and I'm going to take care of that little bitch. And she's very fired up. Straight fired up, Becky Lynch is. And then the main event of the evening, we get the number one contenders match for the tag team titles, Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton versus American Alpha. This was definitely something I was looking forward to. This was something I absolutely didn't want spoiled for me, so I didn't look at Twitter for most of today because I did not want to know who won this match. And I thought the match was pretty good. I didn't think it was the best match that I've ever seen American Alpha have. I don't think it was the best match I've ever seen Randy Orton or Bray Wyatt have, but I enjoyed it. And I thought there were enough kind of false finishes and twists and turns that it kept me interested. And I think what really helped is that I was so invested in the story because I didn't really know who to root for. Because I really wanted American Alpha, like, you know, on the surface, I want American Alpha to be the number one contenders because I love them and I want them to win the titles. And of course I do because they're American Alpha and I love them. But on the other hand, the story of Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt is so intriguing right now that I kind of wanted them to win. And it's just such a swerve from everything we thought was going to happen. When the draft happened and we saw the tag teams in the tag team division, it seemed so obvious that American Alpha and the Usos were going to have a feud for the titles and that they would be the two teams on top and that they would lead the tag team division and that would be the way things are. And I would have been totally fine with that. If that had happened, I would have been like, this is great. This is absolutely what I wanted. And then we got a kind of a curveball with Heath Slater and Baby Rhino.
That was all because the SmackDown writing team actually listens to what the fans want.
Yeah, they reacted to the audience reacting to Heath Slater and Baby Rhino. You know, Beauty and the Man Beast were over. They were like, all right, well, we'll run with this. We'll do a different story. And now it seemed like we were going to get, you know, the Usos and American Alpha again, coming out of Survivor Series. And, you know, it seemed like the Usos were the main people they were going to push. It seemed like they might just get the number one contendership and then we could, you know, move on from Heath Slater and Baby Rhino, go to the Usos because they're the heels, so they'll probably beat the babyface tag team. We'll get American Alpha as the face tag team against the Usos eventually, and then we'll get back on track.
Made sense, and all of the puzzle pieces fit perfectly.
Exactly.
But all of a sudden, someone took dynamite to the puzzle.
Someone decided, no, I don't like this puzzle. I'm going to start this puzzle over here. And we're going to start a whole new puzzle and we're going to start a whole new story and it's going to be even cooler. And it's going to, I think what I love about this so much is everything we've been saying about the Wyatts. Not only is it a great tag team story, but it's also potential for great single stories within the tag team, right? Like even without them breaking up, there are still singles performers that could have feuds and whatnot. And it makes the tag team division feel more like an integrated part of SmackDown. And it makes all of the performers involved just seem more interesting and more well-rounded, which I love.
You know what I loved about this match, actually? It made me want to see American Alpha in the main event of SmackDown on a weekly basis.
Yeah, because they're so good.
They are just absolutely phenomenal. Their chemistry knows no bounds. But at the same time, I'm so intrigued by where this Wyatt situation's going, where Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton stand. This is just striking while the iron is hot. And I kind of feel bad for American Alpha. And I really feel bad for the Usos because the Usos didn't get to talk about them this week, but they are one of my favorite acts on SmackDown.
Are they?
I love their reinvention as a heel tag team. I think that they've done a phenomenal job. Feel really bad for them because I feel like they had the rug pulled out from underneath them due to this. But damn, man, there's a lot of times throughout history where the rug has been pulled out from underneath somebody because someone better or someone more interesting pops up. And I think that's the situation with the Wyatt family.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think this is absolutely the right decision. It's something I never knew I wanted until we had it. And then I was like, thank you, SmackDown Live, for giving me this wonderful gift. And I think that's one of the best things in wrestling is when you don't realize you want something so badly and then it happens and then you're like, yes.
this had a lot of ups and downs, roller coaster style towards the end where, you didn't really know which false finish would end up being the actual finish.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Bray Wyatt had Jason Jordan primed and ready for Sister Abigail, and then Chad Gable came and dropkicked him, right? And then, you know,
just a beautiful dropkick.
Oh, too. Absolutely beautiful dropkick, because both of them have beautiful dropkicks. I absolutely love them so much. And like Jason Jordan also having Bray Wyatt up for Grand Amplitude, and then Randy Orton hitting the RKO on Chad Gable so that they can't actually hit Grand Amplitude, and then Bray Wyatt can actually like reverse it into the Sister. Oh, it's just so good. And I mean, toward the end of the match, it looked like American Alpha was about to win, and then, you know, lights go off. That was my terrible approximation of what the Wyatt noise sounds like, right? But, you know, the scary, bird barn thing happens, and then who has materialized at ringside? Luke Harper. Which, it didn't come off as well as it could have in terms of a distraction, because it was just kind of like, oh, Luke Harper's here, and I will stare at him for a while instead of getting back to this match that I'm supposed to be doing. So it was kind of one of those distraction deals. I'm glad that the match didn't end right there, because that would have annoyed me. And it also kind of made me wonder, I'm like, is Luke Harper's distraction going to fail? Is this going to ostracize him from the Wyatt family further? Is Randy going to use this as fodder against Luke Harper, right? And in the end, because the Wyatts did end up winning, it doesn't count against Luke Harper because he did help, right? And then he...
And in fact, Bray embraced him.
Bray did embrace him. Well, I mean, Luke Harper afterwards pulled Bray Wyatt out of the way, right, at one point, so that Bray Wyatt didn't get hit by Jason Jordan's spear. So Luke Harper did help in the match, not just via distraction, but via actually helping his brother and pulling him out of the way of harm and whatnot. So Bray and Luke Harper seem to be fine. It's Randy Orton that's the kind of wrench in the works who seems to want to stir up trouble and cause all this dissension. And David, I love wrestling storytelling so much.
It's so good. It's just absolutely phenomenal. I really enjoyed this episode of SmackDown. I thought that it was very concise. It's not my favorite in past weeks, and I thought that Raw was just a smidge better this week. But again, man, SmackDown's just so concise, so tight. They keep it tight.
Keep it tight. Xavier Woods style. And I mean, I feel like Raw is a lot flashier when it's good, right? Like when there's a good episode of Raw, it's a lot flashier.
When there's a good episode of Raw, it is very flashy, as to where week in, week out, you can always tune into SmackDown and expect to see some consistent, tight storytelling.
Yeah, and it's an easier watch. Even though Raw was very good this week and I enjoyed it, I still think SmackDown's just an easier watch, and not just because of the length of the show. And I'm sure the length of the show has something to do with it, but
it definitely does.
Also,
but
because
still,
it's
the quality of the writing and the quality of the characters.
Yeah, I mean, the stories from week to week just seem to progress, and it's easier to watch and not think about necessarily, which is probably not good because I podcast about SmackDown every week, so I should really be thinking about it, and clearly I do. But as I'm watching it, I don't analyze it so in depth. And I mean, I've said before, when wrestling can take me out of what's happening backstage and what's like, you know, the politics of everything going on, when I can actually just watch a wrestling show and enjoy a wrestling show for being a wrestling show, that's when I'm happiest as a wrestling fan. And that's what I want to see. I would much rather be analyzing storytelling and characters and character motivations and where they could go and all of that than who's getting a push and who's in trouble with the office this week and blah, 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 blah. Like, that's not my job, right? Like, I am not in the office. I don't work there. It sounds like a very depressing place to be. So I would much rather enjoy the stories and the storytelling as it goes on. I mean, at the end of the show, we did get the segment that we mentioned before. But I do want to give mention to something. Heath Slater and Baby Rhino were backstage watching SmackDown, or watching the tag title number one contendership match anyway, on the monitor side.
How it unfolds, correct.
Yeah, exactly. And, okay, this is something that occurred to me last week and I forgot to bring it up. Baby Rhino at this point, after he shaved, he basically just looks like a wider version of CM Punk from 2013.
My best friend texts me and he goes, why is Rhino looking like Meatloaf? And I loved it. I would say that there were a lot of open bags of Lay's potato chips sprawled out on that catering room floor that they were watching that in.
I kind of love the subtle touch of Rhino just eats all the time.
Yeah, no, it is easily my favorite thing about Beauty and the Man-Beast.
It's great.
And there are several things.
I mean, it has actually prompted me to really crave spray cheese, like, a lot. And I haven't bought any yet. But one of these days...
That is the one thing I can never eat again, no matter what. Because that thing is nothing but salt.
Yeah, it's salt, and also, supposedly, it was cheese at one point. So, it's not for you anymore.
Right. That thing is like 85% of your daily value of saturated fat in one little spray.
It's basically just death in a can, and I love it.
It is. Death in a can, and Rhino chugs it.
He really, really does. And that's probably why he's so much wider now, but we love him.
It's true.
And I don't know, I really love the subtle touch, right? Like, SmackDown seems to get the subtle touches of character right. But one of the things I really liked about the backstage segment afterwards is that Heath Slater and Baby Rhino are watching this. They could have very easily gone off air with them being like, oh, okay, so the Wyatts are our new number one contenders. That's interesting. That's cool. But what do they do instead? They decide to also build the WWE Championship match a little bit more. And also what they do, David, one of my favorite things in the entire world, is they manage to make SmackDown feel like a fully formed universe because AJ Styles comes in to confront Heath Slater and Baby Rhino as they're being interviewed by Dasha Fuentes. And yes, it was Dasha Fuentes because I can tell the brunettes apart. Thank you very much. But
at least one of us can.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's because I'm a brunette woman myself. Who knows? But Dasha was interviewing them and, you know, Heath Slater and Baby Rhino, they seemed pretty confident about the Wyatts. They were like, no, the Wyatts are going to have to watch out for us, whatever. But AJ Styles is so incensed by this James Ellsworth situation and so incensed by his feelings of internal inadequacy at this point, having been beaten by James Ellsworth, he's reacting to that loss. Again, one of my favorite things in wrestling, right? So he decides to just be like, no one cares about your tag team championships. Those don't matter. I'm the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Notice he didn't even have his belt with him. Whatever. Like, to AJ Styles, he is the most important guy. He even says to them during their interview, like, I'm trying to have an interview here. What are you doing? And Baby Rhino steps up to him and is like, really? Like, you want to go, basically? And AJ's like, you're stepping to the champ. You of all people are stepping to the champ. And Baby Rhino's like, I will kill you.
I loved it. It was a very fun way. And it, of course, ended with just a hodgepodge between Ambrose and AJ Styles.
Because Ambrose had just gotten done tending to his friend James Ellsworth, getting loaded into an ambulance.
Of course, and it helped facilitate that big match that's coming up.
Yeah, so I'm so in for TLC this coming week. I'm really interested.
I am too.
Again.
I can't wait for it. It's going to be absolutely terrific.
Oh, I think it is. And another thing that this backstage segment did was give me more hope, because AJ Styles looked a bit dominant after that segment with James Ellsworth, and I was like, the one who looks dominant usually loses at the pay-per-view. I can't have that. I can't go into TLC thinking that AJ Styles is going to lose to Dean Ambrose. Oh, good.
Don't worry.
Dean Ambrose looked dominant at the end. Hallelujah.
Yes.
Hope is not lost.
Exactly. A Hail Mary was thrown and caught for the touchdown.
Everything's
American style, you guys.
Go sports.
American style. We know how to rock the American sports here
sure
on American Inside the Ropes.
Go football.
Sandra, this has been an absolute pleasure this week to do Inside the Ropes, Raw Rundown, and the SmackDown Summary with you. I thought that it went absolutely amazing. The feedback has been absolutely wonderful. And you know what? I know that we don't usually do this, but I'm going to rate the show. I thought that SmackDown this week was a 7.5 out of 10. I really enjoyed the show.
I'm glad that you really enjoyed the show. I still refuse to give SmackDown a number, and because this is my show, I can absolutely refuse to do that. So
absolutely.
I'm going to just go ahead and give it a thumbs up, because as you can tell from how excited and giddy I've been during the course of this podcast, I friggin' loved SmackDown this week, and I can't wait for TLC. I'm really looking forward to what happens, even though, I mean, I think one of the least predictable matches is actually, like, the tag team match, maybe? I mean, I'm guessing that the Wyatts win it, but the tag team match seems to throw all these wrenches in things.
Ooh, I think that I think that they are easily going to walk away with the tag titles.
Yeah, I think so, too. They have to, right? Yeah.
They absolutely have to. I think most of the matches on this card are going to be very predictable, in all honesty. However, I still think that I don't think that that's a bad thing.
I think it's predictable in a good storytelling sort of way. I don't actually know who's going to win Baron Corbin versus Kalisto. Like, I'm guessing it's Corbin, but I'm not super sure.
Right, right. Any of the big matches on the card, I think you can see from a mile away where they're headed with it. And even that is perfectly fine because the storytelling has been so strong.
And I think the stories that come out of it are also going to be strong. And I really like having that hopeful view about SmackDown right now, because it's just, I don't know, it's kind of refreshing to be like, no, I just want to see where the story takes me because I trust that there will be a story. And I think that's lovely. So thanks so much for talking SmackDown with me this week, David.
It has been an utter pleasure. We need to do this again. Overthrow Kenny and have a little bit of intermingling fun between the Raw and SmackDown crews.
It's pretty enjoyable. I mean, Kenny can go on his tours. He can gallivant in his skyboxes with all his celeb friends. And you and I can just kind of hang out and talk wrestling.
Real people talking real wrestling.
It's true. It's true.
None of these fake, phony Hollywood types like Kenny McIntosh.
We're not Hollywood Kenny McIntosh types here.
Nope. He's going to come back dressed like the fucking Miz, isn't he? I knew it. Oh,
if only goodness you were wrong.
take care, everybody.
David, where can people find you on Twitter? You haven't even plugged your Twitter.
Oh my God, I almost didn't plug my Twitter account. You can find me on the Twitter at Zoopsoul. That's ZOOPSOUL. Sandra, I have one question for you.
What's that, David?
Jeff Jarrett style. Ain't I great?
Yes. Yes, you are, my friend.
I'm not as great as you, though. Where can they find you on the Twitter machines?
On Twitter, I am at SandraRuthRW. You can also follow Inside the Ropes at @inside_the_ropes. Also, check us out on Patreon. We have bonus content up there. I know we don't plug it very much. We actually forgot to plug it completely yesterday on the Raw Rundown, which I realized. But whatever, it's not that big.
The Patreon page is amazing. Kenny and I just did our Fave 5 on there.
It's really good.
Go check it. Go check it out. It's one of my favorite podcasts that we've done in a while. We have an excellent discussion about anal sex and racism in America.
Not together, though. Like, you're not anally racist.
You can mix the two, I guess.
You could.
But
I suppose.
I'm sure there's a Pornhub search that has that in the byline.
Oh, there's
somewhere
probably a Pornhub search for everything. But if you want to hear David talk about anal sex and find out what that metaphor actually was, patreon.com/insidetheropes. There's a bunch of bonus content. If you follow along with the Retro Raw Rundown, thank you to everyone who gets in touch and lets us know that you're watching along with us. I love when people tweet
my
me Retro Raw
podcast
things. It's really, really fun to do. I mean, I enjoy both of the shows that I do every week, but Retro Raw is just a whole different ball game, right? Like, this week the goon is gonna appear, you guys, and his boots look like ice skates, so that's a little bit of a preview about what I'm gonna be gushing about. But if you want to check out our pay-per-view reviews that go along with Retro Raw, that's over on Patreon. The Fave 5 that David was talking about, there's an interview with Jim Cornette that Kenny and I did. I actually was in on an interview, which was really strange and so out of my depth, right? Like, I don't do interviews ever.
I'm so jealous, too. Jim Cornette is my favorite human.
You and Jim Cornette really need to get in a room and just hang out sometime and just, like, be angry.
I've been saying this for years. Jim Cornette is my spirit animal. If he ever met me, he would instantly fall in love with me.
You guys would get
along already
so
instantly
well
in love with him. I love the man. I absolutely adore him. We would agree on so many things.
I would love for you guys to meet maybe in Orlando or something like that. I think
that's the hope.
Time.
That is the hope. Or whenever I stalk him outside of Castle Cornette.
That too.
I mean, I didn't, on the record, I did not do that. Don't use this legally against me in a court of law.
Allegedly. Just say the word allegedly and everything is fine.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Don't worry about it.
But yes, everybody, follow us on Twitter. Check us out on Patreon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. Feel free to leave us a review and a comment. And, you know, I mean, if it's a nice comment and a nice review, we would really appreciate that. And we will see you next week. Kenny will be back next week. So David and I will go to our separate corners again and play on our own shows and whatnot. I'm going
to
miss
plot our way to make it happen again, where I am on the SmackDown summary. That's what I'm going to do with my spare time.
And I would pretend to want to be on the Raw Rundown more often, but I just don't know if I want to.
I can't blame you.
Bye, everybody.
Take care, be nice to somebody that you don't even know, and be especially nice to those that you do.